Hearings are wrapping up into Cook County's proposed $6 billion budget. What it contains and what it doesn't have could make many taxpayers smile. But even the silver lining of higher-than-expected revenue in one sector could be attached to a very dark cloud. This week, we talk with Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle about the budget, health care, criminal justice, and more. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. The 2019 budget that's now before the Cook County Board represents an increase of about $700 million in spending over this year's mark. It shrinks the size of the county's workforce a bit, and there's no reliance on hikes in taxes or fees to balance the books. This looks like what some might call an election year budget, and indeed, County Board President Preckwinkle is up for re-election next month. She's also seeking another office, that of Mayor of Chicago, but we'll talk about that later. We're conducting this interview in the Board President's office. Tony Preckwinkle, thank you for having me back.
Thanks, Craig.
Commissioner Larry Suffredin said that the 2019 budget doesn't appear to have any controversy and will probably pass. Were there, in fact, any surprises in getting to this point?
Well, first of all, I'm pleased that this budget is balanced without the need for any new taxes, fines, or fees, and without any layoffs as well. Last year, we had a very, very difficult budget year, and more than 1,000 positions were eliminated. As a result of the difficult choices we made last year and, frankly, over the last 8 years, we find ourselves at this point today. This budget represents, you know, real progress toward our conviction that we need to make Cook County healthier, safer, and more fiscally responsible. You know, I would remind our listeners that over the last 8 years, we've reduced our budget by we've reduced our headcount by 13%. We've reduced our indebtedness by 11%, and we've solved for more than $1.2 billion in budget gaps. So we've made a lot of difficult choices over the last 8 years that have brought us to this point.
This budget, in fact, could have had a gap of hundreds of millions of dollars, but it isn't that, partly because of a $647 million increase in revenue for the state's Health Enterprise Fund, which helps pay for county care. It's the local, for listeners who don't know what county care is, it's the local companion to Medicare coverage for those who don't have health insurance, if I'm not overly shorthanding it. So what's happening with that program that gives you more revenue than you thought you were going to get?
Well, the healthcare system has always been a very significant part of our budget. It's usually about half of our budget. And historically, it's been our health and hospital system, simply our two hospitals, our 16 clinics. But as a result of the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid expansion, we now have 330,000 people that we serve through a Medicaid expansion program. This is one of the many moving parts of the Affordable Care Act. By the way, you know, I think it's really interesting. I just saw a report that 54% of Americans now approve of the Affordable Care Act, which is the best numbers that it's had, I think, since it was enacted. So I think we've made real progress in explaining to the American people how critical it is that as many of our citizens as possible have access to good health care, and the Affordable Care Act is one of the means to ensuring that.
But this is a huge part. This money is a huge part of the county's budget, and so I want to raise a concern that's been because the Affordable Care Act might not stick around if the Republicans hold their majority in Congress, and if they repeal the ACA, that money could dry up, and what would that do to the county?
Well, I'm deeply disturbed by the Trump administration's efforts and Republican congressional efforts to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. We estimate that about 80,000 of the 330,000 people who are county care members obtained their coverage through the Affordable Care Act. And repeal would result in a loss of revenue anywhere from $300 to about $800 million. And that would be an incredible, devastating impact on not just our hospital system, but on our county budget. You know, Dr. Jay Shannon and I and our staffs go to Washington 3 or 4 times a year to talk to our congressional delegation, and I'm particularly grateful to Senator Dick Durbin and Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky in that delegation for their leadership, to talk to our delegation about how important the ACA is to the people of Cook County and the state of Illinois. And I'm very grateful for their advocacy on our behalf.
I can only think, though, that if the worst did happen, the county would feel pressured to keep this going somehow so that these people wouldn't be tossed, you know, back into the winds for their health care. But could the county do that?
I think we'd be severely challenged. But let me just say that our health and hospital system is 180 years old. And in that 180-year period, we've always taken whoever comes to our door, regardless of their race or religion or their citizenship status or their ability to pay. And I'm very proud of that fact. We'll do everything we can to continue that legacy.
Now, the county is in much better fiscal shape than it has been before, but to go to the other side of the coin, there are some commissioners who are saying, see, we are in better shape. There's financial stability. So that's proof that the now-repealed sweet and soft drink tax probably wasn't really ever needed. What do you say to them and to the voters who have been listening to all of the rhetoric and still have some, you know, ill feelings about that tax that was around for a while?
Well, to cope with our revenue needs and sustain our critical services, particularly in public health and public safety, and establish a 3-year financial plan, last year we moved forward with a new revenue proposal. With its repeal, the county lost a source of revenue and the opportunity to do that 3-year financial plan, which is a financial best practice. You know, furthermore, the sweetened beverage tax was not necessary just for that fiscal year, but for the next 3 years, fiscal 19 and 20. And it's worth noting that we cut our expenditures last year, and as a result, we were in a better place this year. Those cuts were elimination of positions. They weren't one-time fixes. So the benefits carried out into the out years. They weren't just one-time things. And we also had unanticipated growth in sales tax revenue. And if we don't see that same trend next year, that leaves us in a more perilous position for fiscal year 20. And let me just say, it's not just that the stock market has been turbulent over the last several days and weeks, but there are economists who think that we're overdue for a correction in the economy, if not a recession, and it's hard to know how to predict what impact that'll have on county revenues.
I want to turn to an area I know is near and dear to you and has been ever since you first ran for alderman, and that's criminal justice. Sheriff Tom Dart was the first of the elected department heads to ask for more money in these budget hearings, specifically nearly $5 million to keep his officers in some high-crime neighborhoods on Chicago's south and west sides. His office is putting up more than $5.5 million for this program that is basically helping Chicago police in the city. How valuable is it for the county to have this kind of a program going on?
Well, the sheriff has said he's going to use some of his own revenues within his own budget to do this, and he's requested more, and our budget staff needs to analyze his request. You know, I need to say that for the first time under my tenure, Cook County began to look at the pipeline into the criminal justice system and not just run our courts and jails. And so we've distributed almost $18 million to community organizations focused on anti-violence, anti-recidivism, and restorative justice. And we're not just slapping Band-Aids on deep wounds. We're trying to address trauma, injury, isolation, and the deprivation felt in some of our poorest neighborhoods, the things that drive our most vulnerable residents toward crime and violence. So, you know, we have focused on trying to be responsive to the challenges that many of our communities face with these Justice Advisory Council grants, and we'll continue to try to do that work. You know, we can't deal with the violence challenges that we face with police activity alone, particularly a harsh police response. That's not going to stem the tide of violence. We've got to invest in the people and in the neighborhoods that are so challenged.
One of the other things that you've been doing is working with the chief judge to reduce the number of people who are jailed pre-trial. And that with the court order has been moderately successful. What's your assessment of how things have been going?
Well, I changed the adjective. I think it's been more than moderately successful. In the 2009-2010, we were averaging 9,000 to 10,000 people in the jail on a daily basis. And for some time now, the average number of individuals in the jail is hovering around 6,000. So we've seen a roughly 30% reduction. And that's the result of, in the jail daily jail population, that's a result of cooperation and collaboration with all the stakeholders, the chief judge, the state's attorney, the public defender, the sheriff, and the clerk of the court. And in particular, you know, the chief judge last September issued an order to judges in bond court that their default position should be release without cash bond. And so what we saw was a reversal of the responses to defendants in bond court. When we had 9,000 or 10,000 people in the jail, two-thirds of them got cash. Two-thirds of the people who came into bond court got a cash bond requirement to get out, and one-third were released on their own recognizance or electronic monitoring. And now it's about the reverse. About 70% of the people who come into bond court are released on their own recognizance or electronic monitoring, and only 30% get a cash bond. And it's really this change in the attitude of bond court judges with the collaboration and cooperation of the state's attorney and the public defender that's driven the jail population down. And we haven't, just to be clear, we haven't seen an increase in the number of people who don't show up for their hearings or don't show up for their trials. We still have very modest non-compliance percentages, even though we have much larger number of people who spend the time between their appearance in bond court and their hearings going to work, going to school, whatever.
But now, Sheriff Dart raised an issue about electronic monitoring during his hearing, and said that the pendulum may be swinging a little too far, that people who might be a danger to the community are being let out. He said there have been people who were charged with murder who were let out on electronic monitoring, and that he's got some concerns that that could come back to be a problem. It could be that people could be hurt because of that.
Well, we've got two electronic monitoring programs in Cook County because they were established by separately elected officials for different purposes. The chief judge operates one electronic monitoring program that serves two groups of people. It provides for increased monitoring of people who are not in custody and are awaiting trial, and it also includes people who've been sentenced and for whom electronic monitoring is the condition of probation. So that's the chief judge's program. The sheriff's program was developed under the supervision of the federal judges overseeing a lengthy litigation about jail overcrowding. So the Cook County Sheriff was given the authority to release pretrial detainees who were neither a flight risk nor a threat to public safety to reduce dangerous overcrowding in the jail. Now, I presume that the sheriff is criticizing not his own program, but the chief judge's program. And again, the chief judge is responsible for this program. It includes people who've been sentenced, and the condition for their probation is electronic monitoring, as well as people who are not in custody and are awaiting trial. And the decisions about who gets to be on electronic monitoring are made by judges in bond court. And I think, with the exception of the sheriff, the rest of the stakeholders, I think, believe that the system is operating pretty well.
One other criminal justice issue I want to take up quickly here, and that is State's Attorney Kim Fox did not ask for more money this time, but she warned that she's going to need more assistant state's attorneys soon. How does a county prepare for that eventuality? It's sort of like hearing you're going to have a balloon payment in your mortgage at some point, that this is going to have to be done.
So our budget team is working with State's Attorney Fox in her office to identify ways that we can be sure that we're best able to defend ourselves in civil lawsuits. This is about beefing up our civil assistant attorney staff. assistant state's attorney staff. So we know long-term that we'll save money if we have our own staff rather than paying for outside counsel. So we're looking at the civil litigation unit, and it's under analysis by our budget team.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Dullimore. My guest is Cook County Board President Toni Preckwinkle. We're recording this in her office, so as I always say, technically I'm the guest, but and happy to be here. I do want to turn to something that's been in the headlines this past week. How is the county reacting to concerns raised by the apparent pipe bombs that were sent to Democrats and prominent critics of President Trump? You happen to be both of those things, so are you a little concerned?
Well, I want to remind residents that they should report any suspicious activity or packages. Nothing's been received by my office, to my knowledge, and I want to thank the law enforcement officers whose job it is to make sure that anything suspicious is intercepted before it reaches any elected official. And, of course, we're all very grateful that although a significant number of these packages have been mailed, they've been intercepted and without harm to the individuals to whom they were mailed. So we're all grateful for that.
But are there any special precautions that are being taken beyond what, you know, we would do for normal Homeland Security alerts?
Usually it's not our practice to divulge the special steps that we're taking to protect ourselves.
Okay. Let's talk about another budget issue, and that is sort of a merger, or it would be when it happens. Recorder of Deeds Karen Yarborough is set to replace retiring County Clerk David Orr, which would sound like a great time for those offices to merge, as it seems the voters and others want. Well, what is the status of that? That movement right now, or is there any movement?
Well, first of all, I would point out that early on in my first term, this is something I proposed, that is merging the recorder of deeds and the clerk's office. But at that time, we couldn't muster the support of the Board of Commissioners to do it. It ended up being done by the voters as a matter of referendum. And the closeout date for the recorder's office is 2020. So there's an ongoing merger, and we'll work with Clerk Yarborough and the recorder to make sure that the transition is as smooth as possible.
Should there be, we're heading into 2019. Is this something that could be planned and executed within this time frame without any discussions having taken place up to this point? Or without many?
Well, the advantage we have, frankly, is that the recorder of deeds is moving into the clerk's office. So the recorder moving into the clerk's office, being very familiar with the functions of the recorder's office, I think will make this transition easier. Since the since the person who's going to have to be the clerk was the recorder, I think the transition will be pretty smooth.
I do want to ask, because, you know, I'm talking about things that have been reported. Are there initiatives that I have not mentioned? What would be one major initiative that you want to nail into place before you leave this job, if you do?
Well, you know, I'm really proud of the work that we've done to make our healthcare system sustainable. You know, we were contributing as taxpayers. Our tax allocation was almost $400 million in 2010 to the healthcare system, and now it's closer to like $110 million. And that's a reflection, $102 million. Okay, thank you for the correction from my budget director. $102 million. So there's almost a $300 million difference, and that's a result of our own good work in trying to make the health and hospital system more efficient, but also the tremendous influx of funds through the Affordable Care Act. So sustainability of our healthcare system has always been a priority, and I'm proud of the good work we've done there. On the criminal justice side, I think the dramatic reduction in the jail population by working closely with all of the stakeholders and reducing the number of people accused of nonviolent crimes in the jail has had an impact on our finances as well. And public health is 50% and public safety is 38%, so about 88% of our budget is in one of those two buckets. And I'm, as I said, I'm very grateful for the good work done by our budget team and by all of our bureaus in the president's office, as well as our separately elected officials, for the collaboration and the cooperation that's gotten us to this point.
Do you see some need for growth within the health and hospitals system? The demand is always as high as it is, and people have been expecting and getting better quality health care in that system than perhaps they might have in the past.
Right. Our focus has been on delivering the best quality care that we possibly can, as efficiently and effectively as possible, and I'm very grateful to Dr. Jay Shannon and his staff for the good work that they've done in that regard. It's hard to know exactly how many members we'll have in our Medicaid expansion program. This year, in relation to last, we ended up with a lot more people than we anticipated, and we're very, very pleased that that these folks, these members, have chosen our Cook County Medicaid expansion program, County Care. It's hard to know going forward what our membership might be, and I'm just hopeful that we'll continue to see growth.
What do you say to voters who will be going to the polls in November, knowing that you're essentially looking for another job? Rival candidate Bill Daley, rival mayoral candidate Bill, you don't have any rivals in the race for Cook County Board President. Bill Daley criticizes both you and State Controller Susana Mendoza for running for re-election and for mayor, though Mendoza hasn't formally announced yet. Her petitions are out. He calls it crazy, absurd, and ridiculous.
You know, I'm really proud of the work that we've done over the last 8 years, and I look forward to the opportunity to serve the people of the city of Chicago.
But are you in some ways shorting the people of Cook County in doing both things at the same time and really having to focus on two different things?
You know, I've worked very hard over the last 8 years to make our county more effective and more efficient. I think that good work has paid off in this budget and in the substantive changes we've been able to make. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity that I've had over the last 8 years to serve the people of Cook County. And I think that good work hopefully will be a point in the race to come.
Is there some good work that has to go into looking forward to, or at least thinking about, a transition? I mean, this you have the unique position of having a job and knowing that you may have to be replaced. What do you do differently?
Well, you know, I think that there are a lot of months between now and May of 2019, so there's a lot of time to work through transition issues.
Well, I do have to ask a couple of political questions. Mayoral candidate Lori Lightfoot this past week labeled you an old-style party boss. You do, in fact, lead the Cook County Democrats. She suggested that you and the organization want to pressure her to drop out of the race. You ran against the machine back in the day. I remember those campaigns. So is there some irony that now you're being sort of portrayed as being part of the machine or running the machine?
Well, you know, I committed to progressive leadership of the Cook County Democratic Party. And, you know, one of the first things we did was form a judicial retention committee, speaking of my criminal justice work, because previously the party had just endorsed any judge who was running for retention. The judicial retention committee, under the leadership of Committeeman Kelly from Evanston and as chair, and Committeeman Leslie Hairston from the south side of Chicago, thoroughly reviewed all the bar recommendations, visited courtrooms, talked with court staff, and concluded that Judge Matthew Coughlin should not be retained. This is the first time in the history of the Democratic Party that we have not recommended somebody for retention. And it was on the basis of the work that he did, frankly, as state's attorney, putting forward evidence that was untrue and led to wrongful convictions of two individuals. So I'm very proud of the fact that for the first time in its history, the party is looking closely at issues like judicial retention, and coming to the conclusion that not every judge deserves to be on the bench. And that flows out of my criminal justice work here in the county. The second thing is, you know, just this week, the party supported Cam Davis's effort to be on the ballot and to be the Democratic nominee for the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District. The party was involved in that suit. Governor Rauner tried to appoint a friend and ally and claimed that that person should be on the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District until 2020. And the circuit court just this week decided that that was not the case. So both in the area of getting good people on the bench and getting rid of people who are unfit to be on the bench and defending our voters in the Democratic primary, we've taken, a very progressive stand. And, you know, I've been a progressive Democrat for my entire political life. When I was in the city council, the things I worked on citywide were affordable housing and living wages. I was one of the co-founders of the Progressive Caucus in the city council. So I think I can put my progressive credentials up against anybody and fare pretty well.
Can you answer directly, though, Lori Lightfoot's suggestion that...
No job was offered to Lori Lightfoot. No jobs have been offered to anybody. You know, I'm focused on running a strong campaign based on my progressive values.
Do you worry that the publicity and the controversy over the pop tax is going to be something that's going to hang over you in that campaign? Because, I mean, I think people are already gearing up to, you know, label you the person who never saw a tax she didn't like and was willing to tax everyday people. And that, it was a powerful argument during the fight over the tax. It ended up being sort of the winning argument. How do you keep that from overshadowing your mayoral effort?
Well, let me just repeat kind of what I said earlier. You know, we clearly have revenue needs. I always say if you want good government, you have to pay for it. To sustain our critical services, are public health and public safety. Remember, that's 88% of our budget. And to establish a three-year financial plan so that we could move forward in a responsible way. This is having a multi-year financial plan is best practice, and we haven't really been in a position before to be able to do that. With the repeal, the county lost that source of funding, $200 million a year, and the opportunity not only to create that financial plan, but to move forward and support our public health and public safety arenas in the way in which we might have hoped. And again, you know, this was something we did not just for it wasn't a one-time fix. It was an effort to try to provide firm financial footing for a three-year period, so for fiscal year 19 and 20 as well as 18.
So basically, your message to Chicago voters is you're going to do the tough things even if they're not popular?
You know, I think that's the job. When I got elected president of the county was in pretty difficult financial shape. And I thought, you know, I'm going to have to do things that may preclude me from being reelected. And I did them anyway. We had a $487 million gap to close, which we did with layoffs, with curtailing programs. We raised a few taxes, fines, and fees, but it was absolutely miserable. $487 million, almost half $1 billion that we had to close. We did all the difficult things that we had to do to balance the budget, and that's what I've done for the last 8 years.
Thank you very much. That is Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. Thanks for having me in. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can follow the audio links. You can also find our podcasts on radio.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Dellamore, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.